So, hi everyone, I'm Jorimo Pyrgo, and today I'm hosting the Future Cities podcast. Today we'll be talking about the Consolidated Urban Green Infrastructure Classification, which is a product from a recent research article I published with my team from Leiden University. It is about assessing ecosystem services and biodiversity in urban green spaces, or at least it is made for that. And today I am joined by three amazing guests. I have Jaco Schuurkamp, who is a senior policy officer for, well, over 25 years right now, has incredible experience in the space of policy in urban green spaces, and is, as he proclaims, an evangelist for the natural capital and ecosystem service accounting.
Indeed.
Indeed. Welcome, Jaco. Nice to have you. But then we also have Dirk Voets, who is working at Cobra Groeninzicht, and he's working there as, well, I think I can say, head of remote sensing. Is that, would that be the right way to say?
Yeah, I think that would be okay. Correct. Yeah.
We are correct. And he's also working on the side, well, on the side, also working as a teacher in remote sensing, and recently won an award as Teacher of the Year. Congrats on that.
Thanks for that.
And then we are also joined with Siska Van Alve, who's working at the Ministry of LNV, which is basically, how would you translate that to English?
Well, agriculture, nature, and food security, I would say.
Great. And you're also working on urban green spaces. Excellent. And today we're talking about the Consolidated Urban Green Space Classification. And the main reason why we are here today is because cities are more and more facing increasingly complex challenges, and those surround climate, those surround human well-being, and those surround biodiversity challenges. And one of the challenges that we now more face is that there's a lot of urban heat, and those cause mortalities, but those also put stress on our infrastructure. There's more problems with water. The imperviousness of a lot of soils, of course, makes it so that there's more stormwater runoff, and those cause flooding or other problems. And there's a lot more air pollution due to all of the vehicles that are there, and less vegetation that can take out the air pollution or catch it and retain that. And then on the other hand, we also have the problem that humans now are in an environment where they didn't evolve to be, and they experience a lot more stress. And in general, the health indicators are a bit lower for people that live in urban environments compared to people that live in rural environments. And then finally, we have the biodiversity bit, which is also not doing so well, as natural environments are being destroyed, fragmented, and replaced by these new urban green spaces. Now, luckily for us, we are all working in a sector which aims to alleviate or remediate all of these problems through implementing new urban green spaces and finding solutions to those problems that are caused by the urban environment. One of the ways how we can do that is implement parks or green patches or trees. And this is where my research kind of took off, is if you want to research the impact of these kind of green spaces, you need to know how to define them, quantify them, and assess them mainly. And there wasn't really a global or international system. And this is sort of where we took a look at the literature and reviewed that, tried to consolidate that. So that's the consolidation part of the QGIC. And then looked at what can we bring together and harmonize. And we basically came together at a two-part system, and one part of that system is land use and land cover mapping, which has been used, well, quite extensively so, but it's quite limited because a park can be many things. There can be grasses, there can be trees, there can be shrubs, and they all have very different impacts on the climate and the well-being and the biodiversity that resides in it or around it. So then the second part of our system is about vegetation indicators, and it tells you that if you use a land use land cover class, that you can then supplement it with either is there trees there, is there vegetation there in some sort of capacity, and how does it look? And we're now sort of trying to assess how that relates to biodiversity, climate, and well-being. Today, though, I want to discuss with these three amazing people, does this system also work for their perspective? And do they have some opinions on that? And can we learn something from their opinions? So the main topic of today will be definitions of urban green spaces, maps, and what is really necessary to make implementing green spaces in cities more easy and better and effective. So I just want to sort of start this discussion off with Dirk, a question for you, because I know you have some opinion probably about this. Dirk, can you give us briefly an idea to the listener what you're working with often? And then the first question is basically, do you use any standard set of definitions for urban green spaces? Do you feel there's any need for that? And do you already have a sort of system that may or may not be QGIC that we discussed today?
Yeah, good point. So there's a lot of questions at once. So yeah, we try to map how livable and how green the cities are. And we run into definition issues all the time. So it goes always like, yeah, what is a park? I mean, that's a very obvious one, but also what is the public space? And what is a tree? Even that is not really properly defined. So we keep bumping into issues. Of course, we implement our own standards for that, you might say, or our own definitions for that. But the problem is that once we, let's just say, we measure every single tree in a city and we give it to the municipality and they have a look at it and say, yeah, but that's not a tree. That's a shrub. That's not a tree. It's a really big shrub. And we keep bumping into issues with that. So yes, definitions are vital and key to this process. Without these definitions, we keep bumping into discussions, and not just a discussion between me and the municipality, but also if some other company pops up and says, yeah, but we can also measure trees, they will come up with different answers and they will also be right. It's not that they are wrong and we are right or vice versa. With lack of definitions, we keep bumping into these discussions and we have no clue how our landscape is performing, basically, without proper discussions.
We've had a previous discussion already in a couple of months ago, I think, by this time, where I introduced QGIC and I've understood that you've been trying to use that. Do you feel like this system or any other system has been currently very helpful for in this kind of work?
Well, I truly believe in the concept. That's the reason why I was so enthusiastic about it. But of course, I do see some things. I still see some issues, that some challenges that we probably need to tackle. But the approach is fantastic. So I love the approach. But yes, I guess it's not finished yet. I guess we need to talk a bit more about how we make this scalable. How does this work in cities with totally different approaches towards green? How does this work in Jakarta in Indonesia? Or I suppose we have some challenges at that, but the concept is fantastic.
All right, great. And yeah, please go ahead.
Well, QGIC certainly contributes to my well-being. To start with, it's very thoroughly built up, but it has the appearance of simplicity. So it's not like I get a headache just looking at it. And I think that's quite an advantage to a lot of other systems. I think also the combination of land use and remote sensing data, I think that's a very nice combination. And what I hope for, and perhaps, well, I will experience that before I retire in about 15 years, is that we are not just mapping trees or shrubs, but that we can map or assess ecosystem services like either cooling or perhaps just shade or humidity or adding humidity, because, well, in my line of work, we have a lot of discussions on how many trees does a city have. But in fact, that's not really important because you are just measuring how many stems you have. But I want to know, what do they perform? And I think this QGIC is a very nice step towards assessing performance. We need some more steps, I think. Still, I think this is a nice start because it has several layers, that makes it easier to pinpoint what you're talking about, because you can call a certain area either a park or a residential green space. But I think that's not really the point. Either a residential green or a public park, they can have the same performance to when it comes to quality of life in the city. And so I think we should try to get there. And I think in the combination of the land use and, well, vegetation, that might really bring us somewhere.
Well, I think that it can definitely fulfill a need that also the national government has. because now municipalities are authorized for spatial planning and urban development. So we see a lot of different definitions on what urban green is and a lot of different rules. So for example, there are already a lot of rules and definitions on pruning a tree. That makes it really hard for the national government to get grip on the task. And for instance, we're now talking about the discussion whether we should implement a green norm on a national scale, but there's not a definition on what an urban ecosystem is. So we should, get grip on and on what we're going to talk about, what is urban green, and to get more grip on the task.
Right, I think there's a really good answer, and I just want to go back for a second, because Yoko just talked a bit about measuring stems as a way of trees, and I hear something here about pruning trees. And what kind of problems do you get when there's this definition that does not necessarily help you achieve the aim of the policy? So, for example, you have a policy where you want to cool, and then you just measure tree stems, but you don't really know if that works. Could you see if you go ahead?
Yes. Well, we now try to operationalize the function of trees by not looking at what the stem is, but by looking at the volume of the canopy. And so, that might be a better way, but then, of course, it's not... you try to find a way to find a measurable characteristic, because it's in fact we should be looking at the amount of
leaf area.
Leaf area. So that's what we should be looking at, but that's at least for this moment a bit too complex. Looking at Dirk, perhaps you already found a solution, but I don't know.
No, I didn't find a solution. Basically, I can only measure that by being very destructive, by plucking a single leaf and putting it under the photocopier and see how.
So no. you want to get a grip on the functional parts of a tree or of a shrub, and how can we get there? And by now we do that by making clouds of dots and then trying to mimic the canopy, but we're not there yet, but we are trying to find our way. And I think it's about trying to define, but not just to define a tree, but what the function of this tree should be. It could have an aesthetic function, it could have a filtering function, it could have a cooling function. What's most important in which areas? And I would say a tree is not a tree, it has a function, and we should be looking at what function is most important in which context.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really interesting approach, because that's also something I try to aim for with the research and the classification that we made, is looking at what are people really trying to measure that is trying to do something. So that's why we classified it in these different kind of urban challenges: heat and pollution and water regulation and biodiversity. And you really see that if you want to have people, if people really want to look at urban heat island, they measure different things about vegetation than if they want to look at biodiversity, for example. If they're really interested in heat island, then they most likely are interested in things such as evapotranspiration or the albedo effect, and you look at different aspects of the vegetation. And if you look at biodiversity, where you might be more interested in what kind of species of tree is it and how does it provide for nesting opportunities, or what kind of bugs can be on there that can be feed for other animals. And I think you're really touching on something very important there. Siska, can I ask you to elaborate a bit more on the tree pruning policies? You quickly brought that up. Is that what kind of problems with definitions or other problems within the urban ecosystem do you face there?
Maybe not on the urban ecosystem, but the different rules with pruning a tree makes it already hard to explain your policy towards initiators. How do you say that?
I guess initiators. Yeah, it's people taking initiative.
Yeah. So I think if we come up with a general common language, it also makes it easier to explain, and also makes it easier for the city council to monitor, of to set goals and to monitor and evaluate. So I think that should be crucial about Chugit, to make it as simple as possible, but also couple, at least in that land use, with the ecosystems it can provide.
Yes. Well, we have working for the municipality, we, for instance, with when man pruning is concerned, we have safety issues. We had a storm in the middle of the summer, so when all the trees have a maximum amount of leaves, so then you have a lot of damage. And sometimes you can predict that. The firm that Dirk is with, they can hopefully predict that for us.
Yeah, we do our best.
So sometimes you can prune preventive, and sometimes it's only after the fact that you can do something. Trees have contributions to urban life, but they might also be a risk. So in combining those two, I think, well, pruning, it could be an issue, but also if you have a big tree, you should not plant it within 5 meters of the facade of a house. So there's different ways to go about. When I need to prune a tree every 2 years, we probably didn't put it in the right spot. So there's different things to say about it, and I think it's very good that we now have a tool to see how we can assess performance, because that helps us also to look at, is it in maintenance, is it in planning that we need to improve? Because a lot of debates, at least in The Hague, is about trees, and there's even people believing that we cut trees because we make a lot of money on that. But we should be able to explain why the trees are there in the first place, and after that, what maintenance is applicable on a specific spot, because it might be different in a park than in a street.
Yeah, that's an interesting point to brought up. Like the spatial context that you put in vegetation in your urban space is really important, and I think that is one of the main challenges that I see for the urban, the QGIC, the Consolidated Urban Green Infrastructure Classification, is that you can be looking mechanistically at what vegetation does, right? What does a tree, what does a shrub, what does grass for biodiversity, humans, etc. But if you're not really looking at the context, and we are already trying to add a little bit of context by having land use, land cover, and vegetation indicators, but if you're not looking at what actually the urban fabric is, it's humans, it's pavements, it's roads, it's buildings, you're missing the full picture. And I think this is one of the main challenges, classification of our system. I'm really looking to expand that and include that. And I think this is one of the main challenges that I see, I'm also interested to see what kind of challenges do you see for classifications and the implementation of them and the use of them. Could any of you elaborate on your ideas? Yeah, go ahead.
I'm not sure if it totally covers your question, but we do see that if you want to report on urban green, it's very important to take the point of view of the humans, basically. So you need to, it's very interesting to take each and every building, for instance, and do it report on the amount of green in the direct vicinity of that building, or in the direct vicinity of a school, or in the direct vicinity of a hospital. And by that, creating like the spatial context between where people actually reside, or people actually work, or people are actually trying to learn, and the amount of green in that vicinity. I do see that is a nice approach to basically, it's the stupidest and easiest thing in spatial analysis, but do a buffer around meaningful objects and do the analysis on that area. Not sure if that totally covers your question, but
I think it does to an extent. You know, consider spatial context basically with vegetation. Yeah. I think that's what you're aiming at. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, there's also a legal reason for expanding this. And by January the 1st, our Environment Act, the Omgevingswet, will be implemented, and we are required to define the spatial qualities, and we have to monitor them. So, well, what are we going to monitor? How are we going to monitor? I think that's very interesting from a knowledge point of view, but work-wise, it's an enormous challenge. because also we have to do that in a digital system that is not fully operational yet. So fingers crossed. And there's another reason for us to embark upon this adventure, and that is the nature conservation law that was accepted in the European Parliament, which sets quite clear goals for nature restoration. Not legally binding, but it challenges us to at least take the first steps to take the initiative. So I think in a few years we will have lawsuits of organizations challenging government. Can you show me what you try to do? Did you really put in some effort? So that's also a reason why this development is spot on as far as timing is concerned.
Right. So go ahead.
I definitely agree. So we should monitor and have like the same system being used, also with the communication, what Dirk told us. But on the other hand, if we look at biodiversity, it's also kind of a common sense. We should not over monitor and want to try to measure everything, because that's even not possible. And it makes it also very hard to explain if you're going to get in more indicators, variables into the system. So I think you should keep it as simple as possible. And also if we look at biodiversity, you should more monitor on the circumstances than on the species being present.
Right. So to sort of capture that idea is that there's this trade-off between capturing a lot of data on biodiversity, which is becoming really quickly, really complex, and looking more to the environment that is providing habitat to a greater deal of biodiversity and is easier to measure. And then there's this current need for a system that is well-defined and is giving some sort of guidance on how to measure and monitor nature, potentially even in a broader sense, the environment. Would the QGIC or any other current systems that you might use fit that role, if you see it at all?
Dirk, you're the specialist.
We're looking at one another now. I think it can take that role, at least. It doesn't have that role just yet, but I think it really can take that role. There was another, let's say, rule or system that I was thinking of as you mentioned that, actually, and it's the 330-300 rule.
Mm-hmm.
As in, it is so simplistic. That's it's both the pro and the con. It is so simplistic, so even the mayor understands it. Sorry, mayors, but it's also insightful enough to provide some information. But of course, you don't really measure biodiversity. You don't really measure anything, but it's still simplistic enough, and you can track it through time. So that will be the good part of it.
Could you quickly elaborate a bit what the 330-300 rule is?
Good point. So the 330-300 rule has been, well, let's say, designed 1.5 years ago by your professor, Cecile Cornelidac. He basically came up with this very simplistic rule, which is from each and every building, and that's both where you live and where you work, you should be able to see 3 significant trees if you look out of your window. You should live and work in a neighborhood with 30% tree canopy cover, and you should be able to reach a park, or officially a high quality urban green space, within 300 meters of walking. Yes. If you have that combination, if you live in a place that adheres to all these 3 rules, you're in a pretty good shape. You will get old and happy. And that's basically the rule.
That's the idea. Great. And if I just say it's just a thought apart now, is that what is defined in this 300 sort of reference as a high quality urban space, urban ecological space or park, or what exactly is that?
It is such a good question, and I think that one of the first thing I said today was that one of the big problems to define is a park. So how do you reach 300 meters? So what constitutes a park, and where does it end?
Mm-hmm.
Where it ends, that's where the 300 meters starts. That's horrible. I have no clue. So we created the definition for the Netherlands, but I can't scale it up to Flanders. I can't do it. I mean, there's no legally binding or official or scalable definition of that.
Well, yeah. There's a practical way to go about it. And what we say, it should be multifunctional.
True.
So
I can't measure that. So.
Yes, you can't measure that, but in Dutch circumstances, that will probably mean that you will need an area of approximately 5,000 square meters, because it's robust enough and because it has good potential for multifunctionality, and not multifunctionality meaning more functions than two or three, which is the obvious small patches of green. And so in the Dutch context, I think we might have found a workable answer, but you're quite correct. It might be different for Flanders, it might be different for Germany, it might even be different for specific neighborhoods in the Netherlands where there's a lot of non-white residents. I think we should not be looking at universal answers, but hypothesis. And I think multifunctionality and robustness are a good guess.
And I totally agree with you. Yeah, so we found a solution for the Netherlands, and it's like along the lines that you just mentioned. But I would love some sort of a definition that they can also use in Canada and also in Jakarta. That would be great, honestly. But I don't see how. It's really hard.
Siska, you wanted.
Well, I still think it is a good thumb rule. So it explains that you need green to see for on every scale, actually. So you need to see green from your own house, and it needs to be reached within a couple of minutes, like a bigger green space. And you also need green around the city. So that makes it clear, but it's not like it should be actually 300 meters. If it is 200, it is also okay. And if it's 500, it's also fine. But it really helps us with getting to know how the task works and that you need to implement it on different scales.
Yes. At the same time, I admire Dirk wanting to have a clear definition, but you are a data guy. I'm a policy guy, and I look at differently. I think we should be able to operationalize things like multifunctionality or robustness, because even if I have a park nearby, if I'm afraid of getting mugged when I step out of my door, even the rule of thumb will not work. So there's a lot of things that come to that. And of course, we should be looking at, we could be looking at minimum and maximum size, so you can estimate, but still there's it's not an in vitro environment, so there's no lab test that we can do, and I think that's the charm of what we're doing. At the same time, it can be really frustrating, but I think we should be from either the data side or the policy side or the science side, we should be trying to gap, to bridge the gap that we have between data, policy, and normal human beings, because we look at it from a policy perspective, but someone living in the street might have total other perspective.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing to touch upon, is that the demands, or rather, what green can provide in a sterile environment or without context, so I mean more simply, is that is not necessarily always what people want, right? There's a cultural aspect, and there is also an aspect of living somewhere with different challenges than living somewhere else. So, for example, just to make a case for this, again, coming back to parks and their definitions being super vague, and then just if I just grab it from the research that we've published, and I'll tell you a little bit more about the other parks that I think are very different but are still called parks. So we call it in the QGIG, or define it as a green space designated for a wide variety of passive and active recreation, usually designed and intensely managed. So that's quite a broad definition, doesn't even include size, which seems to be quite a I would say quite a normal thing to not include size. And this sort of works, but if you look, for example, at a very famous park in Amsterdam, Vondelpark, this one is mainly used for relaxation and recreation. It's quite nice to walk there. It's incredibly green. That's a park. And then that fulfills the needs of the people around it, and probably also a bit around the direct vicinity. And then in Denmark, you have quite a famous park. I can't get quite to the name right now, but if you look at it, it's mostly concrete and it's sort of a basin, and that park mainly fulfills the function of capturing water when there's a storm. And so these both are parks, but they're fulfilling very different roles. And I think there, Jaco touched upon something that's important to really not only look at the contextual demands of the ecosystem, but also of the people and what they experience. So yeah, if you're afraid of being mugged, then a park will have no other benefits. Right? I think that's a good point to touch on.
Well, I'm trying to be a researcher. Well, I unfortunately not reaching your level yet, but I'm also embarked upon a PhD project, and I'm looking at biodiversity policy in cities, and I found some interesting articles that touched upon the issue that people investigating ecosystem services like you do often do not look at decision making. And I'm not saying that you should, but there's a bridge to gap, because when you have the information, that doesn't say anything about whether this information is applicable in a decision-making context. And well, this paper suggests three steps to take for improving biodiversity. One of them is looking at the effectiveness of collaboration between government and non-government sectors. The second is capacity building within local government staff. And the third is how biodiversity conservation and ecosystem governance relate to cultural meaningful practices. So I'm reading this from screen. I didn't just to take that in. It's so vast. I don't think there's one answer to that. And perhaps they are just different worlds. But QGIC should... well, find its niche within this problem, this wicked problem with its many ways. And I think it's the fun of the thing is QGIC. It could help for capacity building within local government staff, but I think it's broader than that. It could also help doing cultural meaningful things, but then we might have to look at the land use categories that you use, because people might not make a distinction between residential green and parks.
Mm-hmm.
They just see neighborhood green or accessible green. So perhaps we should make a social translation of the categories that you use. But I think system-wise, it's still a very valid approach to the problem, but we might have to tweak it to where you want to apply the method.
Right, and to add upon that, I think the categories that we've got right now in the QGIC, so they're about 20 categories of land use, mm-hmm. and they broadly consider natural lands, so basically where biodiversity will probably thrive, and then there's quite a large bit for human green space, and then we talk about park and botanical gardens, so that will tackle more of that social aspect, and then a bit about water and a bit about built stuff. I think one of the nice things we thought of with the QGIC is, and we describe it in the end, is that we acknowledge, and I think that's one of the most important things that we also now see here in this perspective, in this discussion, is that one of the major challenges is the multifunctionality, the wicked problem, the endless complexity of the benefits, trade-offs, and actually receiving them from green spaces. Is hard to capture in a simple system. And the benefit I want to talk about is that we acknowledge that, and we think that if you want to look at those things, you just need to add them on, and you're free to do so. And we describe that in the article, how you can do that. And I think there's a challenge or an opportunity for future research or researchers to find really what kind of other key data is necessary to include to make better predictions about the benefits that can be received from green spaces, really.
I agree.
Definitely. And that can also help to come up with a solution about the split incentive problem that we already talked on today. Because if you get more insight in who benefits and which ecosystems it provides, yeah, you can make the conversation easier about who needs to make the investments and who gets the investments back.
Yeah, so to get a bit more background, for example, a more direct example would be green roofs, right? So yeah. there's probably some public money available for investing in a green roof, but then the benefits might be solely for the person that builds that green roof. Well, for example, if you would put public money in a park, the benefits would be to the public. That's basically what you're talking about, right?
Yeah, so the one who's going to live in the building profits, not even the one who builds, because he or she needs to pay, but then he sells the building and then the one who lives in the building profits from it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting phenomenon, I think I could call it. I just had a different kind of question, and this is more so leaving the realm of definitions, and this is more looking into systems that you already use. So the Qgig eventually is a mapping tool. I'm wondering, and from Dirk I know that he uses different maps, but I'm wondering to what degree are there maps being used in the policy system in the Netherlands? I know we have green maps. I feel that one provides some information, is quite limited. What is your experience with green maps, if you have any at all that you use?
Siska.
Well, I see that it's kind of chaos, I must say. So there is some open data. Actually, there's quite a lot of open data that municipalities use. But you need to be like an expert. You need to have a lot of knowledge on which data is available and which key indicators you can use. So that makes it really hard if you to make a decision on which data you are going to use and what data you should not use.
Can you give sort of an example of like a case, a working case that you've been involved in where you had multiple maps and didn't know how to use that, or do you have some sort of example for that?
No.
Not directly. No. All right. Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, I always compare it to, we want to find the needle in the haystack, but we are collecting haystacks, and then we think we have a bigger chance of finding the needle. But I need to hire Dick to tell me which haystack I should be looking at for what kind of needle. So we have a lot of maps like on trees, but what do we use for trees? We say what kind of trees they are, we say their age, and sometimes we say something like, is it a child, is it an adult, or is it a teenager? But then, of course, in botanical terms. But is that the information people are looking for? And we try even the nice maps that Dirk and his company make. They made, for example, a mapping on green vicinities. And the greenest neighborhood in the Netherlands was Zandpoortzuid, which is where I live. But it did not indicate where the borders are. So did you take part of the forest near to my neighborhood into account or not? And that might be very relevant. But why would anyone want to know about trees in Zandpoortzuid? Because Dirk wants to move over there, perhaps? Or perhaps you want to know what the risk is when you buy a house and there's a storm in the middle of the summer. So what are we looking for? It is so hard to pinpoint what users, to use this word, are looking for. So the user interface hardly ever fits what the user is looking for. So how can we help? And I'm still very puzzled how we can do that, because one of the things is that being part of a municipality, we have several responsibilities, and people might think that our maps are biased towards our legal task. So they might think Jaco doesn't want to give us permits, so he makes the maps extra intricate, or he leaves out the possibilities that are there. On the other hand, consulting companies might make a map which looks very interesting, but does not show all the legal obstacles that you will experience in real life. So, for instance, from a data point of view, Dirk might see that there is a lot of recreational opportunities within 300 meters of my house. But if it's a nature reserve, it might be that I cannot even access that area. So there's a lot of things that you need to know to answer a question.
Yeah.
And you, well, I don't. I'm not aware that, that there is any product that answers all those questions, but perhaps you're working on one.
We always do. Obviously, I work for a private consultancy company, so we try to give answers that people are actually happy with. But it's a big challenge. So I recognize that this is a big challenge. We do our best, obviously, because otherwise we're stupid, but we do recognize that we create a map. It is according to specs. We told in advance what we would do. We give the map and people are disappointed. But yeah, but that's not what I meant. So what did you mean then? Yeah, I don't know. So this is a big an area of search, and the examples that you gave are very good. We tried to give the right answer, but what is the right question? It's really hard. Yeah.
And probably what is the right interpretation of the map?
Yeah.
Well, I think Dirk just said the quintessential thing. I think we should not be looking for answers. We should be looking at, are we addressing the right question?
Yeah, fully agreed. And we closed off the area of definitions, but yes, your example of Sandport South is really good. I remember that the municipality of Delft was recognized as the greenest city in the Netherlands, when they got an award for that. And then 3 weeks later, they were awarded the harshest, most impervious city in the Netherlands within 3 weeks. And so they were totally puzzled. Said, what the heck? What is this? How can we be both the greenest and the most impervious? That's impossible. But it was a definition issue. One study was looking at gardens and the other one was looking at the public space. They were looking at two different things, but they didn't mention that. So, yes, it's all back to definitions, but I guess we closed off the definition.
We can mix and match, really. I think they're so intertwined. I mean, that's really why this research product is coming from definitions and then going to mapping and then now sort of full circle, including policy and industry, and seeing really what are the problems and to implementation of urban green spaces. I think we covered quite an interesting bit, really. I think there's one final thing I'd like to ask you, and that is, you've been all working on urban green space quite a while. What do you think makes, not necessarily relate to QGIC, but if it relates to mapping and definition, that'd be nice. But what do you think makes, what are the qualities of a project that works well when you're implementing urban green? So what are the key factors that make a successful green planning?
Well, if I may be so bold, I think the KISS principle applies. Keep it simple, stupid. It's complex, and there's no one answer. We should acknowledge that, and then from there on, make it as simple as possible. And I think the QGIC is a good example of that. Of course, it's complicated, and you studied a lot of things that I'm totally unaware of. But still, I think you have a mechanism that might work. So I think we should be looking at accessibility. And also for people that are not really into data, we recently found out that I think something like 30-40% of the Dutch population cannot work with the digital tools of the government. So we have quite a challenge on that. So I think being open, being accountable, and well, as simple as possible, that would be my three keywords. And from there on, I think it's all empirical.
Yeah, I can only add to that to say that simplicity is probably the main driver. If you can't explain it to the town council or to the mayor, then your project is doomed from the start. And for that reason, it should be very simplistic, and it probably doesn't need to cover. For instance, you can simply say, "Yeah, I want more shade." That everybody understands that, and with that, biodiversity will come along, but don't start about biodiversity because people say, that's just too complex. But if you say, I want more shade in your street, that sounds cool. Simplicity.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. And maybe another thing to add, work on what the energy that is already available in the municipality. So there are a lot of inhabitants that want to do something with green in the city, and they find it very hard to get in contact with the municipality, so make that easier and keep in, use that energy.
Good. That's great advice. And I think just to summarize sort of what we've discussed is that the product classification, the consolidated urban green infrastructure classification, and other urban green space classifications can be a useful tool. But the thing is, they often miss things that are important for actually successfully implementing them, and that citizens or inhabitants or the people that live there fully get the benefits that they are supposed to have, and that to actually have all the data makes it such a complex problem that's not easily executable, and you never really have all data that you need. And then in the end, the most interesting thing is that if you want to actually have a successful implementation, that now I hear we're still people, keep it simple, silly, as you said, and work with the people of the municipality and the people that live there. That's basically it, I think. You agree?
Fully,
yeah.
Excellent. Great. Well, then I think I would really like to give you a massive thanks for participating in today's chat about urban green spaces. Thanks again for joining.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the invitation.
The Future Cities podcast is an outreach effort brought to you by Natura-based solutions for urban resilience in the Anthropocene, or Natura. To learn more, please visit www.natura-net.org. If you have any questions, feedback, or suggestions for future episodes, you can email us at futurecitiespodcast@gmail.com or find us on Twitter at futurecitiespod. If you enjoyed the episode, please rate and subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. See you next time.